the tone, please record your voice message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up or press pound for more options.
Hey, Chels, it's your dad. I'm still stuck here. I wish I could see you. I wanted to talk to you for your birthday. Just wanted to call and say happy birthday. I mean, you only turned 10 once. I love you, and I miss you. And I promise when I get out of here, we're going to Splash Mountain. You can hold me to that. Shannon, please let her hear this message from me. Again, Chels, I miss you, all right? Hope you're being nice to your mom, not giving her a hard time. Again, when I get out of here, I'm gonna hug you until the end of time. I love you so much, and I miss you. I'll talk to you as soon as I get out of here. Bye.
What's going on, Bill?
What's up?
What's up, man?
Man, I just tried to call Chelsea. Obviously there was no answer. You know what? I can't stand Shannon. Always just draining the life out of the smallest situation. And it's our daughter's birthday. I mean, come on. Can I not talk to her on her birthday? I know she's right there. I mean, it didn't even ring enough time. She knows I know. She hit the ignore button and it's straight to the voicemail. I mean, no, fucking bitch. Come on, man. It's my daughter.
No, I know, Bill. I can see how it's affecting you.
I mean, Kay, she's 10 years old. You know, it's not like she doesn't want to hear from him. I mean, that's my favorite person in the world.
Right.
Shannon's using this to get at me, I'm sure. Always doing anything she can for fucking attention.
Well, you're doing the best you can, though. You know what I mean? You're staying in contact. I mean, there's not a lot you can do here. Your hands are tied, but I see you putting in the effort. You know, just keep trying. Just keep calling.
I'm not cool with it. Not cool with this shit. I mean, come on. Been here for almost 30 days now. Right. Can't talk to my daughter. And now you want to keep her from me? I mean, she's 10. It's her birthday, for crying out loud. Come on.
She
didn't pick up the phone. And at that point, she ignored me. I mean, dude, I'm getting so fucking heated right now. I can't even.
Look, let's take a second. I understand, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's going to be easy. I mean, this is hard. We're all in here. You know that not all of us get along in here, you know? I get it. But for your daughter's sake, I just, you know, just keep going.
Between fucking Shannon and Harriet and everybody just thinking, oh, fucking, it's the doctor's fault. Fucking Ava. Reminds me of Shannon so much. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. Attention-seeking bitches. Seriously.
You know, and I know what you mean about Harriet. She always has to take the lead on the conversation. She doesn't let anybody else talk. She's always talking over everybody. So I get your annoyances with her. Okay, so
you can't even fucking get a word in. It's like Harriet the Hen.
You think she was the moderator?
I mean, for real.
Right.
I can't say anything.
She has no idea that Rose is the moderator. You know, Rose is the one doing the job. A fantastic job.
You know what? I need you to do me a solid. I need what? You to, I mean, I'm not gonna, you know, I can see a little something here. Maybe get Rose to, you know, talk to Harriet. At least tell her to cool her jets so she can stop fucking talking over me every time. I mean, Kay, think about it. We can't get a word across. I mean, if you just speak to Rose, I mean, she is the moderator. And she listens to Rose. She damn sure doesn't listen to me.
Okay. Well,
I mean, think about it. Think about it.
All right.
I mean, seriously.
I'll mention something to Rose. I'll talk to her. I don't want her to think, you know, that something's obvious or, you know, we have something going in cahoots on the side, but I will talk.
I mean, she calls you KK for crying out loud. Like, come on now.
You know, she's gorgeous. I'll do what I can.
Where the hell is the salt and pepper?
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
Yo, you giddy yo.
Awesome. I didn't know you sang.
You know.
Show tunes?
Shirley Temple style.
What Shirley Temple movie will we watch tonight?
We're not watching a Shirley Temple movie tonight.
Oh, Board games and Shirley Temple.
The drink's all right.
Shoot the what? Loop. I stuff my tummy.
Oh my goodness. Here they go again.
Can we start focusing on the case?
Bounds are an interesting concept. We are sometimes encouraged to set them, sometimes encouraged to break them. Sometimes they are protective, and sometimes they are stifling. There are many boundaries in medicinal relationships, fewer in personal relationships, and somewhere in the center of that Venn diagram lived Dr. Stowe and Ava Michaels.
Robert taught a lecture in February that year at the Miami-Dade Center for Psychiatric Research and Advancement. The lecture was titled Stabilizing Rapid Escalation in Cases of Erotic Transference.
Thank you, Dr. Mathers. In psychiatry, what does transference mean?
Transference is the patient's redirection of feelings onto their therapist. You see it frequently when a patient falls in love with their therapist, or at least when a patient believes they've fallen in love with their therapist. However, it can occur in a myriad of ways, from parentifying their therapist to hating or distrusting their therapist, to developing extreme dependencies on their therapist to elevate their therapist to a godlike status. As you can see, it's varied, but it's a common phenomenon.
Thank you. Were you present on the day Dr. Stowe gave his lecture?
I was.
And did you also review the work cited and case studies examined for the development of this lecture as a professional courtesy to Dr. Stowe?
It was more of a personal favor, but yes, I did.
Thank you, Dr. Mathers. Dr. Mathers, actually, hold on one second, please. I'm sorry about that. Dr. Mathers, would you please give us an overview of the content of this lecture?
The lecture was based on the unfortunate occurrence of a patient developing an extreme and unhealthy dependence on the therapist. Dr. Stowe went over signs and indications of a rapidly developing transference and methods for coping with this professionally.
Did Dr. Stowe share the details of a personal case history with one of his clients?
Yes, he did, but he didn't mention the patient by name.
Did you understand this unnamed patient to be Ava Michaels?
Objection. Speculation.
The objection was sustained, but the prosecutor later verified the fact that Ava Michaels was the only patient Dr. Stowe was seeing during the development of his lecture.
He said his patient was emblematic of the patient type he coined the entitled. This referred to the rich, the famous, the powerful, the resourced, and the connected. The entitled patient requires treatment wholly unique. Dr. Stowe said his patient, one of the entitled, grew to a state of such frenzied transference that she threatened to consume him professionally and personally.
How did this happen?
The patient in his lecture began therapy typically, but she was in evident need of extensive treatment. She and Dr. Stowe agreed to increase the frequency of their sessions until eventually he was seeing her 5 to 6 times a week.
That sounds like a lot. Is that normal for your field?
No, it's very atypical. Dr. Stowe spoke to that in his lecture. He said the excessiveness of their sessions was conflicting. In the first 6 months of treatment, Dr. Stowe was eager to increase time together because he was noticing radical improvements and credited that to their rigorous schedule. Gradually, however, her behavior would deteriorate, and the numerous sessions would imbue his already entitled patient to a new grander sense of entitlement. She began feeling free to call him for emergency sessions, either by phone or demanding he come over in person. While at first he acquiesced, the frequency of these emergency sessions increased, and also the time of day and nature of the session became more and more erratic. Midnight phone calls became standard, and sometimes the content of their sessions would deviate so egregiously from psychoanalysis that she would spend hours fretting about her wardrobe or the condition of her skin. When he would attempt to extricate himself from these conversations, she would grow erratic and unstable. This was one way in which he caught himself up in a tangled, ill-advised professional circumstance, all because of transference.
Can you please read the highlighted portion of Dr. Stowe's lecture, page 5?
The entitled patient needs the therapist 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Her thirst for the company of her analyst is unquenchable.
Colette Stowe, the defendant's daughter.
The phone would ring all night long sometimes. She usually called his cell, but if that was on silent or dead or anything, she would call the house.
Was that disturbing or upsetting to you?
I mean, it was okay. That was his job. OBGYNs and surgeons get called in the middle of the night all the time because of medical emergencies. That's what my dad was dealing with, only his were psychiatric emergencies.
Did this dependence on your father take a toll on your parents' marriage?
I mean, they're fine.
Do you ever recall them arguing about it?
Yeah, I would hear them occasionally.
What would they argue about?
Just that, I don't know. The nighttime stuff was hard because my mom is a light sleeper and that would just really screw her up every time it happened. She would tell him he needed to make her stop, but he never did.
Your mother would tell your father that he had to make Ava stop calling.
Yeah.
Besides the late night calls, were there other times Ava would take your father's attention away from the family?
Yeah. She would sometimes need him to come over and see her, and sometimes that would be during a family function. Like my cousin's wedding this one time, my dad had to leave the reception because Ava needed him.
He left his niece's wedding to attend to Ava?
Yeah, but I mean, he had to. That was his job.
Was your mother upset?
Yeah.
Was your mom ever upset by the social appearance of the way your dad tended to Ava?
I mean, Ava Michaels was this bombshell actress, right? She was known for being really sexy, and she was in all these tabloids, and in some of the tabloids, my dad was in the picture, and sometimes he'd be protecting her from the cameras, and sometimes that would look like holding her or whatever. I don't know, just the amount of time they spent together and were seen together wasn't super ideal for my mom. Just 'cause, you know, it doesn't look great. It's a little embarrassing from the outside.
Would you describe your dad's treatment of Ava as a strain on your parents' marriage?
I mean, no.
Colette, what were your mother's feelings towards Ava?
She loved her. We all did.
Thank you.
In his lecture, Dr. Stowe said his patient suffered from transference because she viewed him as a friend, a father, a boss, and a lover. She needed him to fill all these roles in her life, for him to attempt to fill her every void. And as he fell short, she punished him.
How did she punish him?
Expressions of anger, disappointment, and vitriol. She would lose herself and berate him, then call back, sobbing for forgiveness. Whenever an occasion surfaced in her life wherein she needed a male figure, she would look to him to become that.
Did he cite any examples in his lecture?
Before and following a work meeting, the patient would book sessions. Sometimes she'd bring him to the meeting, and she wanted a boss figure to guide her professional decisions.
Any other examples?
Well, on a romantic holiday or occasion, if his patient was alone, she'd phone him for an emergency session. And sometimes these sessions would involve only sipping champagne and keeping her company.
Did he charge her for all of these sessions?
Yes, he was diligent with his finances, and I suspect that was a safe way of maintaining a modicum of professional distance.
Did he cite any examples of his patient casting him as a father figure?
He spoke of that in more general terms, the way she'd consistently seek his permission, etc.
And did Dr. Stowe experience a mounting pressure from all of this?
Naturally, this was a tremendous amount of expectation and virtually impossible for anyone to navigate successfully. The odd relationship affected his own mental health and, most importantly, his own judgment. Dr. Stowe began accepting and even reciprocating his patient's neurotic behaviors, which led to the section of his lecture on countertransference.
What is countertransference?
It's the opposite phenomenon of transference. When the doctor redirects feelings for another onto his or her patient, it most commonly happens in response to transference, when an unhealthy dynamic takes root in the therapeutic setting.
Tell me more about Dr. Stowe's struggle with countertransference.
In his lecture, he spoke to a great struggle with it. The patient compelled great sympathy, and Dr. Stowe felt subconsciously moved by a need to protect her. The sexuality and intimate needs of the patient caused an inordinate amount of conflict in Dr. Stowe.
Please read the marked portion from page 13.
The patient's primitive, unpretentious need to be viewed not only as beautiful, but as sexually desirable, shone through in the majority of our sessions. Without a father, she was eternally in pursuit of male approval, most overtly in the form of sexual conquest. My authority in her life made her need for this conquest particularly poignant. Needless to say, my feelings in response to this aspect of our therapeutic relationship were conflicting. To acquiesce in any manner would be to betray her trust in me as a professional. To deny her would be to risk re-traumatization.
This passage in Dr. Stowe's lecture became one of the most scrutinized pieces of the Stowe trial. It arguably offered the greatest clue as to whether the pair ever had a sexual relationship. Guys, I am so excited about this newest sponsor of mine. The more I read and learned about it and then experienced it, the more I fell completely in love. It's called Wander Beauty, and if you wear makeup, it's about to change your life for real. I do not have patience in the morning for much, but definitely not a full-on complex makeup regimen. And moreover, I wouldn't know how to do one if I tried. My ideal makeup routine would be 20 seconds long. Boom, done, on with life. But I wanna look nice too, you know, so that's the balance. How do I get maximum impact with minimum effort? This brand called Wander Beauty has actually made that happen by creating multitasking beauty products. What? What does that mean? I wanted to know too. So for example, they have this thing called the Illuminator. On the Glow Blush and Illuminator is its full name. And it's two-sided. And on one side is the color, which you can use as blush or lipstick, that kind of thing. And the other side is the highlighter, which you can use to contour above your cheeks or put on your eyes, anywhere you want to brighten. And essentially, you can take this one product and use it for every part of your face to create definition and a polished look, and it looks amazing. And that's what they mean by multitasking. Because they squeeze so much function into one product, it's also perfect for travel. You can just throw it in your purse and it takes up a ridiculously small amount of space, and you can touch up anything you want throughout the whole day. They have a whole line of products like this. I spoke to one of the co-founders personally on a phone call, Lindsay, and I loved her perspective and her message. She was a professional model and started this company with a mom of two because what they realized is that no matter what we're doing, all women have the same problems, and that is that we don't have time and we don't have space. And Wander Beauty really addresses those functional issues in a beautiful way. And it gets better. They're major into skincare, skin health. Everything is made with such clean, good-for-your-skin products to actually enhance your complexion. and everything is cruelty-free, no animal testing. I can't believe this is real, but it is, and it's all gorgeous. I am happy. Definitely check this out. Go to wanderbeauty.com/deliberations today to save with Wander Beauty's Just One Swipe Complexion and Lash Duo or any of their other amazing bundles. That's wanderbeauty.com/deliberations, if you want to do me a solid, to find your perfect set today. I'm so into this. wanderbeauty.com/deliberations.
Okay, so, I mean, I want us to grapple with this idea of what is Ava, or what was Ava's and Dr. Stowe's relationship, actually, given all that we've heard.
It sounds to me it was a relationship that even Dr. Stowe wasn't sure of.
I will say that it was a conflicting relationship.
And he definitely stepped over the line. There's no question about that.
There was countertransference for sure, and that's
even wrote about it in his essay.
Yeah.
Countertransference, I agree. But the fact is that he did charge her for each session, so it was therapeutic, part of his new way of treating it. You can look at it.
Oh, you are not saying this, Bill.
I'm just stating, I'm always one to state the facts. I'm just saying that she was charged for every session.
She was charged for him being
no matter how you
stepping
take
over
it.
The line.
Well,
oh my God.
Adelaide,
word.
You can say that. I'm just stating
he
the facts.
He took advantage of her at every given opportunity. And let me tell you how he did that, because here he is giving a lecture saying, hey, here are the do's and don'ts of transference, what they are. And yet, quite remarkably, the night that she died, she called him and said, I need your help. And he rebuffed her. And yet he knew that to rebuff her was to risk extreme re-traumatization, especially when he had just had a previous meeting with her that was an emergency meeting. So here he is clearly stepping over the lines, clearly being unprofessional. And the fact that he's charging her means that he's really, really good at taking money from people, not that he's giving her therapy. Let me give you a bill.
Let's hear.
He's charging her to keep the professional aspect. But I think, you know, we all understand that Dr. Stowe was conflicted by seeing her so much. He even talks about it himself. You know, he's this transference and then countertransference. So where, in turn, is he supposed to draw the line as well? Because this is still an experiment.
It's his job to draw the line. It's his job. That's what the rules of therapy and psychiatry are all about. It's
but
his
job.
But if he
does draw the line, is that going to push Ava into a traumatic experience?
You know,
it's going to be more traumatic.
Point.
It's going to be much more traumatic for him to get involved
you
with
know,
her.
Kay, that was an excellent point you made.
Thank you.
His whole thing was an experiment with her. He experimented everything with her.
Yes,
he was trying to write new documentation, new protocols, and it backfired. She's dead now.
Well, medicine's always changing.
Well, let's not say that, because that's saying that Dr. Stowe is responsible when all
she
he was
is.
Doing
he
was...
Is.
Come on, that okay, you
that
think,
yet.
We don't think, so let's just draw it there. What I'm saying is he's using this information to educate other therapists. So not only is he helping other people, he's trying to help Ava himself. He's just conflicted by what's going on.
He didn't help Ava.
No.
In the past.
He hung up the phone on Ava. That's
past,
how he helped her. He re-traumatized
he's left a wedding,
her.
His
that's
niece's
how he
wedding.
Helped her.
Yeah, he did.
He left his niece's wedding. He had to go.
Because
so
that's his job. Even his children have testified that's his job.
I can't even...
Go ahead.
We had to look at the situation at hand. He had a family dinner that he was at with his wife. His wife was already upset that he kept leaving to tend to Ava. So he had already met for an hour and a half. He did not want to leave again to put a strain on his marriage. So that night, his intentions were not to hurt Ava, even though he might know how she would react. It was simply to tend to his wife, to love his wife who was having a problem with what he was doing.
I believe doctors take an oath to
and Ruth was
take
there.
Care of their patients first before their familial obligations.
Here's the problem, though. Here's the problem is that he is continuously kind of building in her this sense that he really loves her and adores her, even if he doesn't, and, you know, and is not worried in the least about betraying her trust in doing this and all of that. And then all of a sudden, out of the clear blue, decides that he is going to deny her and re-traumatize her.
But it did say in the thing that she lashed out and then immediately would like call back and ask for forgiveness. So that could have been one of those things where he's like, I'm just going to chalk this up as another She lashed out at me. She's going to call me back. Ruth is there. Everything will be fine. I told her to walk on the beach.
Thank you.
We had an emergency session already. I mean, it's like I'm just going to keep bringing this up. It's the speculation of we don't know. Yes, it's written down in his
But the thing
he has documentation.
The thing here is that thinking about the mode in which he's attending to Ava, he talks about this type of therapy for the entitled, for the and so he's trying to find something that's even extra special for the amount of privilege that this class of people have already, and in doing so is going against all of the rule books. And if we were deliberating on malpractice, I think we would all be able to say that he's
I thought
not
that
doing
was strange
that
I too.
He's also trying to be a pioneer. I mean, if you find new medicines and new ways for therapy, it's by going against the grain. He's
I don't think though your economic resource gives you the better up on how you should be treated mentally. It sounds to him like he's like, oh, she's entitled, so therefore because she's rich, we have to give her all this extra stuff.
And a lot of coddling.
And
a lot of coddling.
And it just seems like...
Which can't be good for her. I mean, you can't hope that she would become healthy by the things that he was doing for her.
Well, but it says in the testimony that her change was almost immediate.
And then it deteriorated.
And then, which means it took some time, and then it got worse. It reverted to going back to the
because
way it was
because it wasn't
almost
working.
But it started working.
But
at the beginning, it was working.
He did say in his essay that the increase in sessions was very atypical, and it stopped working as well as it had.
So then,
been.
Why didn't he revert back?
Exactly, that's my thing.
Okay, and right after time.
Yeah, no, Bill, you do have a good point. You do have a good point.
It started out in a certain way, but then like he's not changing his therapy tactic. He's asking her to journal and go have this alone time and like maybe build independence. I don't know, but yet he's always at.
What I don't get is
going to change his tactic.
What I don't understand is he seems like the authority on transference and counter transfer and how it works, and yet he seems surprised and put out when his patient exhibits the symptoms, and yet he feels that he has to be the big father figure and talk down to her, or in a way that shuns her, which re-traumatizes her. I find that very surprising.
Well, not
to say
that it re-traumatizes her. He has to assume all of these roles because of the lack of a father figure. He has to be the lover, the boss.
That was his assumption. That was his assumption. That was his experiment.
Exactly, it's his experiment, and it's not him being the.
You don't experiment on a person who's suicidal.
Especially if you have a sexual situation with them and you're giving them enemas.
It's experimental. How are we supposed to help them? And again, he's doing new, groundbreaking
work. And if this is a highly sexualized person that takes every situation that we're talking and sexualizes it, the last thing I want to do is insert something into her anus.
She was a highly sexualized woman and figure. She was highly sexual in her behavior.
But why would you cross that line? If you are talking to a patient that's so highly sexualized and talking to her and everything she does is like, ooh, look at me. Look at my boobs here. And don't you love me? Don't you love me? And he goes, yes, you need an enema up your ass. I'm sorry.
Well, see, that's too much.
Sorry.
That's too much.
Crossed the line.
Yeah. Yes, I think we have crossed the line.
I think it means you, Harriet. Exactly.
Well, I think Harriet saying it explicitly is what is actually. I mean, the fact that we're all made uncomfortable by the intimacy at which
and
he
Doctor,
knows her.
Yeah, Dr. Stowe even said in his essay, and while he was talking to his colleague, Dr. Mathers, that them meeting more often was conflicting with what he was originally going for. That's a
something
fact.
Something was transforming in that relationship.
Yeah, it
and
was.
We're supposed to figure out right now. Like, so yes, it's iffy.
Was
we
it
have,
professional?
It's,
so
was
I don't
it,
I don't think malpractice is what's on trial here.
That's true.
We're talking about murder.
We are.
Okay, so here's the issue. Here's the issue is that Dr. Stowe either killed her physically or caused her to commit suicide by what he was doing with her psychologically. Either way, it's murder.
There's more options.
So both of those are convicting a man, but the facts do not point to that.
Well, they do point to that.
He admitted to counter-transference, which he admitted to,
Bill,
and that is not what he was aiming for.
The facts show that there is a shadow of a doubt that this did not happen. The facts show that there are so many conflicting stories about protocol and what happened that therefore we have to say that, hey, there is a possibility that this
Thank
did not
you,
happen by itself. So therefore, a shadow without a doubt means that she didn't kill herself.
That.
You just admitted it. There's a possibility that there's some erroneous information going on here.
We cannot convict this man unless we are 100% sure with the facts. He's spoken to 100 people or more. Yep. He's not going to go in there.
Okay.
He's not going to tell his students, last point, that, hey, this is what's going on, and in the end, I'm probably going to kill her. No, well, he's trying to educate so that no one else goes through this situation again.
Well, who would tell his students he was going to kill her?
Bill? He's giving the facts on how he's conflicted about his own new... All right.
All right, so yeah, here's the thing, which is if you're planning something or if you're not planning, if you have intentions, good intentions or bad intentions, we're actually... I mean, intentions don't matter. Someone's dead and we have to just deal with, you know, what happened. So he might have started out with a good intention and then things clearly changed in that relationship.
It was clearly changing.
Yes. Can we agree on that?
Agreed.
Okay, great. We've got an agreement.
We can agree on that, but we can't agree on what we know what protocol is. But I can agree that there was weird behavior.
There's weird behavior. He admits to it. Dr. Mathers talks about it. People who were taking pictures and seeing them. I mean, the family, the wife. I mean, there's some oddness about that relationship.
A lot of oddness.
So things are changing and transforming, and maybe that wasn't his intent. But he has a conflict there at the end that we heard where he says to acquiesce would be to acquiesce to her demands, so we can, I guess, infer that those are romantic demands or just like all of his time demands would be to betray her trust, I guess, in him as a psychiatrist. I don't know. And then to not do it would be re-traumatizing. So he doesn't really know his place, which Harriet pointed out a few minutes ago. I think their relationship is inappropriate, and you can definitely, this case is going to go on for a while. People are going to be thinking about this. This is a big trial, you guys. Yeah. Think about this. If you can make somebody kill themselves and you're a psychiatrist, are they supposed to be held accountable?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's the point of this trial right now, actually. This is something that people will look back on. He's moving somebody to be more unstable.
And it even sounded like they were like there was conflicting stuff with the family as well, because during Colette's testimony she was saying that everybody in her family loved her, but then she also said that it was a strain on the mom and Dr. Stowe.
Mm-hmm. 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 Mm-hmm.
So again, caught in the crossroads, which I wouldn't want to condemn a man for his teachings and him being found in a situation where he himself is now at a problem. I have a problem with something that I started. My intentions were good, right? So we can say that he would never hurt her. Well, but you guys are saying that he pushed her to do something that she didn't want to do, she attempted this four other times.
Right, they're alluding that it's intentional.
Yeah, you know, no, I never said it was intentional.
But intent doesn't matter with an outcome.
All his family cares about her. His children, his wife even cared about her.
But see, had he never crossed the line with her, had he never brought her into his home...
We don't know
had
that.
Had he never done any of that, we wouldn't be having this discussion.
She
because
before then, he may exactly, have extended her
exactly.
Life
but
by
hold on,
her for a
no, no, no.
Weeks.
But let me.
She didn't kill herself.
Let me say.
She died of an overdose.
Let me say this: if he had never crossed the line, then we would say basically no harm, no foul, because he did what was expected of a professional.
But he didn't.
But he didn't.
Over and over again.
You can also say that if Ava's ex-son never found her, she would be dead. And we could pronounce that on numerous occasions. So I don't want to speak to ifs. Stick to the facts. We don't have enough. We cannot convict this man.
But I just wanted... Okay, look, the point here is that as someone who knows her mind very well, who's been clearly very close to her, and that she depends a lot on him for many, many roles that we can admit are probably inappropriate to expect of Dr. Stowe, but it's an interesting question. I know what you're saying, Bill. It's like he had good intention. He didn't make her do anything. He didn't da 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 da. But like he could have set up a situation in such that he has the skill set to be able to set someone
and
up.
And I agree with that. He is
that.
A very educated him. And he have the skills. He could have manipulated. The question is, do we have the facts?
We don't.
That point, we do not.
We have also, plenty
so
of facts.
So you all are going to hang this man. But we have no facts.
We have facts that
well.
He manipulated her.
Think about this. We have no idea who administered the enema. It could have even been more than one enema. We don't know. It could have been Ruth that did it, locked the door, and then a few hours later was like, oh, hey, by the way, something feels off. We don't know. She could have done it. Dr. Stowe could have done it. All we know is that we Okay, I'm kind of lost.
And who's well, that it's we all don't right. know. Well, who's to say? Who's to say that,
Doctor?
Mikey, I gotta love you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
All right. So we'll meditate on that, and we'll get back to it.
Next time on Deliberations.
God damn it, Ava! You've got to stop these games. You are stopping. Do you hear me?
And then she felt angry.
Everyone uses me.
Today's cast: Jury, Cami Middleton, Brandon Lamberty, Teru Hara, Tony Love, Chris Markle, and Becky Brown. Courtroom: Dan Lerner, Nora Fisher, Marissa Sullivan, Denise Hoey, Dominic DeSantis, and Sherry Eppries. On next Jury Break, Jess is back. Don't miss it.